Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, today we're going to continue our men's panel discussion of Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. And welcome back, gentlemen.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here. By way of reminder, just want to let you know in the studio with me today is my best friend and compatriot in literature, Mr. Daryl Hope. We have Georgia Dad, my assistant, and we have John A. Wood, more commonly known as Jack, who is one of my favorite students here at the college. So, now last time we ran out of time, so do we need to tie up any loose ends? Anybody have any comments they want to make on the overall picture of the book before we do some other things? I'd like to get into more of the characters today. So any other final comments? No, no. I'll just make one. I really like the book. But again, it is as Darius Witt said last time, you know, you can have, your life can be either a comedy or it can be sad. And there are some really sad things in the book. And so let's talk about some of the characters. I think the one thing that Austen does is she really is writing from the feminine perspective. So we don't really have, you know, she's not writing, you know, what is it, third person
omniscient. Yeah.
Omniscient. Okay, so. But she is, she does give you insight into what Jane thinks, and she does give you insight into what she thinks through Elizabeth, and it's through their conversations. You have to really pay attention to the conversations, and you have to focus. But she doesn't really give us, I think, a lot of details, and I would like to know more of Mr. Bennet's thinking. I'd like to know more of Darcy's thinking. But we do actually, I think, learn a little bit more about Darcy from his conversations, and especially with us and Elizabeth. So I'm just going to open it up and just let you talk about, let's say, and you can talk about either male or female, but if we could concentrate on the male, that'd be great. So let's start it up with you, Daryl.
Well, you know, when you look at the novel, the preponderance of female characters is striking, because I counted about 8 key male figures and about 19 or 20 key female figures. So the number of female figures is much greater, and that obviously shows the author's, you know, understands the way women think, and obviously she's going to have more of those kinds of figures. The first male figure, though, that we really come into contact with is Mr. Bennet, who is the father of the family. And he's really portrayed as being an absentee father, pretty much, in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so you sort of see then the consequences of that on the family. The question is, why is he an absentee father? Is that because of some flaw in his own character, or is that because of a reaction to a situation in which he finds himself? And you'd sort of tend to think, at least the male would tend to think, it's the result of the latter. He's married to a sort of flitty wife, and so he's retreated. He's retreated into his library, away from that. And so I think he's sort of surrounded by a lot of a female presence, and he doesn't feel like he's in control. And so he's sort of then taken this, you know, this absentee kind of view to everything, and that does have a lot of negative consequences. And you actually see that then as the novel plays out, that there are negative consequences in the family when a father takes that role rather than stepping up. You wonder if that's another lesson that Jane is trying to bring out. You know, I don't know about her own family background, but that that you'd wonder if there's something there, a lesson she's trying to teach in that way.
Yes, well, her father was a rector at a pretty well-known church, and so she did, I think we know that she helped out with around with socials and, you know, helping with the poor and the parish and all that, but he was a very active father, so I don't think necessarily Mr. Bennet would be a picture of him because he made sure they had great education. He could not find a boarding school for them, so he actually created his own homeschooling. Right. Homeschooling isn't new for us today. He also boarded some other young people from the local area in his homeschool. So I don't think so much of that. But I do think, I do wonder with Mr. Bennett, this is what I hope we could discuss a little bit, is why did he choose Mrs. Bennett? You know, what was different about Mrs. Bennett? You know, did it, you know, is it, was it, now he's not up on the higher end of the aristocracy, but I don't think they're necessarily that poor either. And he's a little higher than, let's say, the Lucas. Now, he was a knight. Mr. Lucas was a knight. So they may have actually been even a little lower than the Lucases, to be honest. And I don't understand all of that as well as I should. Elizabeth Clark seems to really, you know, have picked that up quite a bit. But I just wonder is, you know, if you look at the two oldest daughters, they're really pretty sound. But if you look at the younger daughters, they're not sound. So is that a reflection of the marriage? And I think the ladies all feel that's true. And the thing is I agree with you that I think most people perceive him as an absentee husband or an absentee father. But I just wonder in my own mind, and again, I'm probably going to be a little more, you know, wanting to back and support some of the males. But the thing is, I wonder if he got stuck in a situation and then it did not turn out so well. And he just kind of gave up. I mean, that's the way I look at it, potentially what could have happened.
I think it's true. I think it's interesting the way that you brought up about the fact that the two older daughters are so different from the other three daughters.
Right.
So that the question is, was he more involved in their education and in their growing up than the other three? Is there some point in that marriage where he stepped back? And therefore, that resulted in this difference that are in the three younger daughters as opposed to the two older.
Yes. Okay. So, George, do you want to weigh in here?
Yes, I do. I agree. I think Mr. and Mrs. Bennett are again a product of change. I think they were very much different when they were younger and they met. And I think Jane Austen is kind of revealing that, you know, it might seem good. But if you change for the bad, if you become like a Mrs. Bennett and if you become reserved like a Mr. Bennett, you can have productivity at the beginning, like with Jane and Elizabeth. But if you don't keep that, if you don't keep that, those good traits stable, and if you don't keep them pure, then chaos will follow. Because I do think you're right about him not being an absentee father. I think at the beginning, because the way Elizabeth and Jane treat him, you can see that he was obviously present in their youth. You can see that he was there. Because they respect him a lot. And even when, like, Jane is, Elizabeth is concerned about Mr. Collins, she goes straight to the dad. You know, she knows where the head is, and she's one of the older ones. The younger ones, I mean, they have no respect for government whatsoever, whether it's mum or dad. They're just, and I think that's, again, shows the product and the change. I think even with the daughters, you look at Jane, she's way more respectable than Elizabeth, and then Elizabeth is kind of a middle ground, and then the more you progress, they start hating government more and more.
Yeah, Mary is kind of a real intellectual. She gets, you know, lost in her education, but Lydia is just crazy. I mean, she really goes crazy.
Yes.
Kind of thing, so.
Yeah, and I think you're right about, you know, obviously parents have an influence on their children. You can't deny that, and I think Austen knew that, and I think she was revealing that. If the parents don't keep the good in the family, if they change for the worse, then it's going to carry on into the children.
Yeah, I don't want to excuse Mr. Bennett, mm-hmm. because I still think he failed, and you can see it in the three younger daughters. But the thing is, I'm wondering if that stratified society or where they were at a certain point, it just kind of, they got locked into something. And remember now, Mrs. Bennett was very beautiful. And then, you know, he knew that, so did he just fall maybe for emotion, or did he think it through? And so once you're in that situation, I mean, divorce would have been not a very acceptable thing at that time, unless you were like King Henry VIII or something, you know. So,
well, if I can just make a point, it's interesting, I think, when you look at who is the favorite of each, because Lydia, the mother, Mrs. Bennett's favorite daughter was Lydia.
Right.
Well, look how Lydia turned out.
Yeah.
And the father's favorite daughter was Elizabeth. Yeah. And look how Elizabeth turned out.
Yeah.
So you really understand the underlying character of both of the parents by their reflection in their children. And so you realize that the children really, if Mrs. Bennett thought Lydia, and you wonder, well, is now what happened with Lydia in terms of the way she sort of goaded Wickham into this relationship, was that reflective of the way she did her own husband, goading him into a relationship?
It could be.
And that's what led to the problems.
Which leads us to Miss DeBow. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who's in charge of the church? Mm-hmm. It's Miss DeBow.
Right.
It's not Mr. Collins. So go ahead, Mr. Wood.
You obviously are talking about Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite character in the book.
What did I do? Step on some toes?
No, I really... The book is designed to make you dislike Mr. Collins and Lady Catherine de Bourgh. But that can't stop me from enjoying the humor I get out of her absurdity, like I mentioned before.
Yeah.
In the satire that Jane Austen reveals in those characters. That's a really awesome, great point you mentioned. I know we should be talking about the men in this men panel, but I can't help but talk a little bit about Lady Catherine de Bourgh and her domination.
I'm sorry, I mispronounced that name, de Bourgh. It's hard to get that. It's hard, yeah. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, she truly does dominate the men around her, her station and her wealth, causing men to lose their masculinity around her.
Yeah, one thing that Jane doesn't do for us that I really wish she would is, okay, how did Charlotte put up with this? You know, if you think about it, they both become like kept people. You know, if she's in favor of it, then she's kept by Lady Catherine's wealth just like Mr. Collins is. So anyway, are we done with Mr. Bennett? Because let's get into Mr. Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Are we done with... Go ahead. I know George wants to talk about Mr. Collins. So go ahead. Go ahead.
I like Mr. Collins. I know a lot of people hate him. I just find him a very interesting character. Actually, to be honest, none of the characters in this book I liked, other than a few, like Mr. Collins and Jane. Those were like the two that I really liked because they were interesting to me. I thought Jane's relationship with Bingley was boring, but I liked Jane as a character. She intrigued me because I didn't know what was going on in her head. Elizabeth, I knew because she spoke it. Mr. Collins... he was just very interesting. He spoke when he wanted to speak, and it was just really funny to me. Again, I guess it's probably the satirical side of it. I just wanted to meet him. I wanted to speak to him in person. I wanted to see if he was really like this, and I think that's why I liked him. I don't necessarily agree with him or anything like that. I think he's exactly what people think about him. He's snobbish. He's all those things. But I think he would be a really interesting person to have a dinner with because... if he were to change, if he were to see what is bad about him, he could be one of the greatest characters in this book, I think, because he is very headstrong. He's very service-orientated to Lady Catherine de Bourgh, whatever you want to say.
Sorry, it's my fault.
Now I'm confused. But it would just be a really interesting character to see change, I think. We don't see it in the book, but in my mind, I progress further, and I'm like, okay... What if he didn't do that? What if he thought like this? And he's just a lot more genuine than some of the others, I think. So I think it would just be a really, okay. really good character.
All right, Jack.
That's a very generous viewpoint to have of him there, George. But I do agree with you. To have a dinner with him would be extremely interesting. I think you and I in that situation would probably be the Elizabeth silently poking fun at him while he remains oblivious to it all.
That's really funny. You know, it's like I was, as you two were talking, I was thinking back to my high school days, and there was this, I won't mention his name on the radio, but he was the most interesting character that you just love to hate. I mean, it was like he could be so irritating, but everybody was drawn to him. And you know the thing that I have to ask you, I want to ask this question with Mr. Collins. Do you think he was really sincere when he came to the Bennetts? Let's talk about entailment. We've got to talk a little bit about entailment, okay? Because you know that this is all very much bad. It gets a lot of bad press today. You know, male white privilege and all that. So do you think he was really, you know, coming in, and he offered to marry Elizabeth to save the girls from the, you know, the problem of entailment, or was that just Mr. Collins and, you know, his, well, his maybe subterfuge to kind of win the hearts of the family?
I don't know about subterfuge. As George said, he's very forward, very blunt in his dealings with them. He comes forward around page 70 to 73 when he starts talking to Elizabeth in his famous proposal to Elizabeth early on in the book. He is very forthright about his intentions with her. But I don't believe that he is truly honest about his professing his love for Elizabeth. Obviously, that's impossible to happen in just a few days' time staying with this family. But even on page 73, he lists the reasons for his marriage. He says it'll set the right example of matrimony in the parish that he serves in. That's not a bad thing. That's really wonderful. That's a biblical principle, is that ministers do need to marry and set the right example to the people in their congregation. Secondly, he says it'll greatly add to his happiness, but notice how he never mentions greatly adding to her happiness. He never says that. But the reason that he wants to marry, and the one he focuses on the most, is because Lady Catherine de Bourgh told him to. He pays particular attention to that point. And nowhere does he mention that of what he can give to her in marriage apart from the patronage of his great Lady Catherine de Bourgh. So I don't believe that his professions of love and his intentions were pure from a standpoint of being in love with her or marrying for those right reasons. He married for reasons purely because he was directed to by his superiors. I think he was more worried about appearances than he was truly worried about the correct reasons for marriage.
Okay. So do you think, I guess this is another big question that I have, is, okay, so we know he loves the patronage. You know, he loves Lady Catherine because of what she can provide for him. So he loves that. I think he loves the position of being a minister. I mean, that really, if you look at the book, and I think if you study it carefully, there were like three big positions that a male could want. One, you're either just handsome and rich because it was passed on to you, or you're either in law. And she does talk about lawyers, and she talks about the ministry. So those were the big three acceptable things. So what was kind of shocking to me is, it's Lady Catherine controls that whole area, even the church. I mean, she picked him. You know, she's sponsoring him. She's providing his house. She's providing his money. He does what she says. He picks the woman that she thinks he should pick. To me, that's just shocking, you know, that could be happening in society. But it's obvious, as George was saying, this is history, you know, and that this is what's happening. And I felt the same way. We're looking at a snapshot of history that we wouldn't get if Austen hadn't written this novel.
And she actually tries to control the marriage of Darcy, Mr. Darcy, because she wants him to marry her daughter.
Yes.
And so she tries to control through that way as well. So she's really trying to control society in a lot of ways. And I agree with Jack what he said about Mr. Collins, but I really don't like Mr. Collins at all. I think that he is a despicable character, someone I would not want to be around. He's obviously only interested in marrying Elizabeth because Lady Catherine tells that he needs to be married. And so it's okay. I gotta find a wife right away. And he's so shrewd that he tries to make it look like he's helping the family get around this whole entailment issue by his marrying Elizabeth, which is not his purpose at all. His purpose is just to keep his patron, you know, happy.
Yes. Go ahead, Jack.
Initially, he would have had the intention of following the commands of Lady Catherine de Bourgh and would have used the excuse of the entail in order to approach the Bennets. But I imagine that excuse probably felt good to him, and he would have continued that charade, probably even lying to himself inside.
Go ahead, George. Rebuttal.
Well, no, I agree with everything that's said. the thing that I like about him is like he's like a puppet. Okay, but and
because I want to know why you like him well, like a puppet. Yeah,
I don't like the fact that he is a puppet. I like the characteristics he has while he's a puppet, because I think once you cut the strings, he could be an interesting character. He could be an interesting man, because he's doing a lot of bad things. I agree that he's manipulative. I don't like that he goes there and he comes across like an angel of light and he's like, okay, yeah, I want to marry your daughter to help your family. I don't think he has good intentions at all. I think he's completely controlled by Lady Catherine de Bourgh, but cut those strings. And if he was just a normal character, not controlled by her, his intensity and his genuineness, like his drive, I think would be much better than a lot of these other characters in here who are, in my opinion, made to seem genuine and made to seem like they're real, but they don't have a controller, so they are who they are, and they're actually pretty wicked, some of these characters.
Let me ask this. Why do you think then, I mean, to me, I think he's like idiotic. That's just my view of him. Maybe this is just a difference of age and youth, but but why was he so surprised when Elizabeth turned him down? I mean, he was like shocked. And we're thinking, I'm reading this, I'm thinking, she's never going to go for you. What are you thinking? Now, in my mind, he reminds me of some pimply-faced skinny guy that, you know, it's just like that's the way he reminds me of. But I don't know. So I'll throw that question out and see what...
To me, again, it's the issue of pride. You know, when you're proud, even when Darcy made his proposal to Elizabeth, if you think, well, this is the way it's got to be, this is the way I think is the way it has to be, you would think, obviously, the person that you're making the proposal to is going to accept, you know. And I think that's the way he felt, too, is again, an example of pride, that the pride that whatever he wants would happen.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think that's true. Go ahead, Jack. We'll give you one more shot on Mr. Collins.
Yeah, well, even in the book, Mr. Bennett actually comments on the letter that Mr. Collins writes, and I think it just sums it up perfectly. He's a obsequious blend of civility and self-importance.
Yeah.
He believes he is higher than everyone he talks to in Hertfordshire because of his connection to this great lady, Catherine de Bourgh.
Because of the string connection.
Yes. But what about, do you think it because he's a minister too? Do you think he's better? Is there an element of self-righteousness in his character?
I think so, yes.
Well, you wonder about, too, the element of tact that Jane might be making with it. Jane Austen, the author, might be making with this, you know, that she shows someone who should be pure of character and pure of motive actually just as wicked as some of these other characters that are out for their gain.
That's what I feel, too. I was like, well, as a minister, you know, first of all, you know, if you're biblically a minister, you're not going to let Miss de Bourgh or Lady Catherine de Bourgh push you around and basically give the sermons for you, you know, so that just wouldn't happen. Okay, so let's just see if we have time. Do we have time to get a few comments in about Wickham?
I don't like Wickham. I don't think a lot of people like him, and I think that's a good thing. I think Wickham is the character that Austen has designed to, if you don't know what he's like at the end, if you don't know all the ending part, you might like him at the beginning. You might think he's one of the normal characters. You might be like, hey, Wickham would be good for Lizzie. Wickham, maybe even good for Jane if Jane liked him. But again, the change, he doesn't necessarily change like his character. He's always been wicked, but the perspective of who he is as a character changes. And then we see who he is and we get that revelation. And then we're like, well, now we really don't like him. And I think this comes back to the Pride and Prejudice thing. We weren't prejudiced against Wickham because we didn't see the pride behind him. That was revealed to us, and then we were like, okay, now I don't like him because I see clearly.
So do you think we see Wickham through Mrs. Bennet's eyes? Because she's willing, you know, for anybody to marry him because he's so dashing. He's handsome. He's also in the military. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the other male characters or male professions that's accepted in the book as being in the military. So, but he actually, to me, turns out to be such a fink, you know.
Well, he is.
Because he's after just money. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the reverse. It's, you know, I think there wasn't that society where Mrs. Bennet is always trying to get her daughters to marry up, to marry into wealth. And that was really basically how they could take care of their daughters, was to marry them up. But it seems like he also wants to marry up. You know, he wants to marry wealth, and he's going to use his military and his good looks to do that. So,
I think Wickham is an interesting study on deception, because that's really what he is all about, is deception, and how his deceit plays out in people accepting that he is the way he shows himself to be. And then later, when you realize what he really is, then the reaction and the consequences of that. But he really is, of all the characters, he's the most deceiving, because he like any other appears to be one thing that he's definitely not.
Definitely not. Okay, we're getting close to time. One final comment, Jack.
Yeah, I agree. His key talents is deception, and it's only due to his talent for speech and his good looks that people are fooled by it at the start. The final quote here, just from the book, it says, from Elizabeth here, "There's some great mismanagement in the education of these two young men," talking about Darcy and Wickham. "One has all the goodness and the other has all the appearance of it."
Oh, that's good. Yeah. What page was that?
That's page 152.
Okay. Well, we want to do that for our listeners out there. Okay. So we are running out of time, and this will complete our discussion of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So next time we will begin our discussion of Charles Dickens' Great Expectations, another great British novel, and we'll have a lot of good discussion on that. So we will be using the Penguin Classics edition, so you can purchase that for about $8 at Amazon. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search the address Just the Best Literature, and remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.